always hiring for kindness, hiring for patience. We just need them to be like responsive, encouraging, upbeat, good sense of humor. Like we have as a company, like 24 guiding principles that are integral to our culture. Having a good sense of humor is on the list.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process. Hey, welcome to today's show. What are we in? Season 17, second episode here, and we've got a fun guest for you today. His name is Nick Courtright. He's the founder and CEO of Atmosphere Press, which is a hybrid publishing company that puts the author experience first. And as an author, I am so excited to hear what that means exactly. But we're also going to be talking, of course, human-centered leadership and some of the culture and approaches that Nick takes and that Atmosphere Press has with their company there. So Nick, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. I'm glad that you're here. We're going to find out more about your work and your approach to leadership and all those good things. But before we do, I wanted to ask you if you could take us back. Now, I suspect I know the answer because I read your bio and we have something in common here. But that said, take us back to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader.
And what my earliest memory as a leader. Well, I'm very curious what you saw in my bio that would call some commonality out. So I'm looking forward to digging into that. But I think, you know, for leadership, it has been something that I've grown up with. I'm the oldest of six kids, which of course means my parents were, you know, somewhat crazed or irresponsible or just loved children. You know, so even from when I was, you know, very young, I always had all these younger siblings. And at that point in time, I wouldn't say my leadership was particularly enlightened. It was, you know, plenty of bullying and chastising and teasing. You know, these were my, you know, my methods, the tools of my trade. But I do think that just from a young age, you know, having people, you know, quote unquote, sort of following me, you know, needing to sort of take my lead on things, definitely made a big impact in my growth as a leader and sort of learning from that experience in some ways how not to do things, how not to be a good leader, how, you know, there are other ways to do things that maybe are going to be more encouraging, you know, better. But, you know, when you're a kid, you're just sort of bumbling through figuring it out. But I think from that sort of early beginning, and then having all those younger siblings and, you know, trying to, you know, guide them forward, is definitely something that, you know, sort of put me on the path to being a more natural leader as an adult.
Well, you hit on exactly what I thought you might hit on, which is those childhood experiences and being the oldest of six. So yes, I am also the oldest of six kids.
Wow. No way.
Yeah. And similar, I like how you put that. The tools of the trade were not the most enlightened leadership tools. Yeah. My first book I opened by talking about my dad left me with the responsibility to get the house clean when I was 11 with five others, younger siblings. And my solution was to lock them in the basement until they had it done. So, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very good. That'll teach them, you know, they'll get it. You know, you can sit up there and sip your orange juice and they get the work done. And, you know, I remember always, you know, I would try to, you know, coax them into things, you know, it's sort of like in Tom Sawyer, you know, where he tries to encourage everybody to paint the fence by saying what a great time it is painting the fence. It's not a great time. It's a terrible time. But if you sell it as a great time, you know, people might try to get on board. And I remember my dad read that story to me when I was a kid, and I definitely took some lessons away. It's like, oh, what? It's so much fun to do these chores. Don't you want to do them too?
You seem like a leadership instruction manual, huh?
Yeah, definitely. A little bit of sales, a little bit of leadership, you know, whatever it takes.
Nice. Well, those, I appreciate what you're saying, you know, a lot of the learning there is you learning what not to do and what didn't work. And yeah, I don't know about you, but I did teach them, boy, they learned not to follow me into the basement. They learned to lock me in the closet before I could return the favor. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely good. And now that obviously all my siblings are adults, it's a different kind of thing. And it's always interesting going back and, being around them, because no matter how old you are, no matter what your accomplishments in life are, as soon as you're back with family, it's just, you're a bunch of kids just fighting for parents' love and attention and respect and all of that sort of stuff, like arguing over who gets the best seat in the car, arguing over who gets the nicest bed, who gets the first pick of the food, all of those kinds of things. They just bubble right back up to the top even decades later.
I would like to say we're immune to that, but I don't think any of us are. So, yep, that is the nice fun thing about family. So, all right. So, Nick, let's fast forward a little bit. So, those early leadership lessons as the oldest of six, but now you're the CEO. You founded Atmosphere Press, a hybrid publishing company. So, let's just talk. Just kind of drop us into the story a little bit about Atmosphere Press, how you got there, what it is, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so it's also kind of a crazy thing. I was never intending to be a CEO. Some people, when they're young, they're like, oh, I'm going to be a business owner, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. That wasn't really in my, family history, that type of thinking. It wasn't something that I'd envisioned for myself. I was a writer. That was my background. I got my undergraduate degree in written expression. I got a master's degree in creative writing poetry and had, published some poetry. I got a PhD in literature and I was a college professor. So I was all in.
The traditional CEO path.
Yeah, exactly. Like all CEOs, I wrote a lot of poems. And I still do. It's still, an incredibly like fun and fulfilling thing, but I was just on the academic track. That was my life. I was in the classroom, which of course is another great opportunity for fostering leadership. I think that was a really sort of formative experience because I was a professor for a dozen years teaching creative writing, teaching literature, teaching lots and lots of freshman composition. Reading many very last minute five paragraph essays. I don't necessarily recommend it, but that was what I was doing. And I was, helping a couple writers on the side with editing their projects. They'd come to me. I was, a poet, I was a writer and editor, and was just helping them out. And then an author wanted me to help him publish his book. And I had a little bit of small press publishing experience. So I was like, okay, all right. I sort of blew him off for a little while. I was just focusing on teaching. And then I was like, all right, sure, I'll do it. And his book was about the cosmos and about the meaning of life. So I was trying to think of like, oh, what should I name this press? Like, oh, maybe I'll call it like Universe Press. No, that's no good. Maybe Cosmology Publishing. No, that's no good. Atmosphere Press. And I saw the domain name was available. I was like, bingo, got it. And it was literally like a 3-minute thought process, and that became the first Atmosphere book. That was in 2015. And now we've published about 1,200 books.
Oh, wow.
So one thing led to another, and I eventually, obviously had to leave academia, start hiring team, started by hiring, one editor to help me because I couldn't read fast enough. And, slowly but surely it just grew, hired cover designers, hired other editors, book designers, proofreaders. And then publicity team, the whole deal. And now we got to have a team of about 45 book professionals and, really try to provide an excellent service for authors.
Nice. Well, I am obviously an author. I've got six books to my credit, seven between Karen and I, and we've got our next one's coming out just in a month or here so here from our recording. It'll be a month previous to the airing of this episode. So have worked with traditional publisher, worked with another one before that, have independently published. I am curious, what is it that makes your approach Author Central. You said author experience first. So I'm very curious, just for sake of our listeners, they may not be authors themselves, may not be in the publishing industry, but just for the sake of learning more about your work, what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, first off, congrats on the new book. I know that's always, you know, quite the process, putting one of those together. A lot of work goes into it. And I think that realization that I've had four of my books published, and you know, I've probably written a lot more than just that. That's what has sort of survived the wood chipper of, you know, the editorial tyrant, right? Mm-hmm. And I just really understood that writing a book is a lot of work, you know, and I'd also seen from personal experience, from knowing a lot of writers, that a lot of times the experience that a writer had with trying to get their book out there was kind of torturous. And a lot of the contracts also didn't favor them. You know, you would submit a book to agents and never hear back. You would submit to publishers and never hear back. Then you'd get a form letter rejection a year later. If you were lucky enough to get a contract, you might not get a lot of say in editorial. They might twist your arm on changes. They might not take your feedback on cover design and just sort of slap something on it. You know, they might give you a release date that doesn't jibe with your personal schedule. There were, you know, and of course, a traditional publisher also is going to take a large percentage of your royalties and potentially the rights to your book years and years into the future, even if the press goes under or stops supporting you as a writer. So I'd seen these kinds of things happen to a lot of writers, and I just from the very start knew that if I was going to be involved with the press, that we would want to do something differently. We were going to want to make it writer-centric, author-centric, because I was a writer. I knew what that was like. You know, I wasn't just going to try to, you know, capitalize on somebody else's intellectual property. So sort of where hybrid publishing fits in is between traditional publishing and, you know, independent self-publishing. So it basically is providing all of the professional sort of insights that you'd get from a traditional publisher like Penguin Random House or HarperCollins, such as, you know, professional cover design, editorial layout, publicity, distribution, all of those kinds of things, yet you keep the same rights and royalties that you would if you were self-publishing. Of course, you know, to make that actually function, there is an author funding part of the equation in which authors put in an amount up front to fund all this labor that's going to go in, but then they're the ones who stand to reap the benefits on the back end.
And what I would say for any aspiring authors out there is that that is also the case if you're going to self-publish. You need to get all that work done one way or the other. So the services that Nick's Atmosphere Press are providing, you've got everything that is in one place, and no, they know what they're doing. You're not having to cobble it together and so forth. So if you're looking to do this, those are services that are vital and essential for your success. So give that plug to what you're talking about there, Nick.
Yeah. And I think, and I really have a lot of respect for people who self-publish and do it all themselves. But the fact is that about 90%+ of self-published books have like pretty serious problems with them. You know, that working with professional team is going to make a difference. And you can, by all means, go out there and you can hire individual, you can go on to Fiverr and try to find a cover designer, and you can try to hire beta readers, and you can try to figure out how to upload the book for distribution yourself. You can try to do that, and you can try to hire people. The really nice thing about working, you know, with a hybrid publisher like Atmosphere is just that it's all under one roof and everything's vetted. It's not just, you know, a bunch of random folks. And also because we do stand behind the books that we work with, all of our books say Atmosphere Press on it. We're not merely a service provider. You know, we actually are promoting your books, having them on our website, trying to get the word about them out there. You know, we take pride in our award-winning books and try to help promote them and, you know, do better. And that name credibility, you know, helps our authors be able to get into bookstores and sort of have greater reach than they would have if they had gone completely independent.
All right. So for everyone listening, if you're thinking about writing a book, first, stop thinking, start writing, because you got to write it in order for it to be there. But beyond that, you've got these kinds of resources and a glimpse into that process. And where I want to go next, Nick, is, and I wanted you to set the stage for us about the work you do, because your values and your approach to the business, all of that infuses the culture that you're trying to create. So as a poetry writing CEO, that approach that you're talking about, putting the author centrally in the process and in the product that you're providing, that transitions into the people you're hiring, the approach to culture, and so forth. And I know that you've shared that you hire for kindness as almost as a skill set. So there's the skills that people have, but then there's you're hiring, actively hiring for kindness. And so I'd like to explore that a little bit. When we're talking about human-centered leadership, I haven't really anybody said that they hire for kindness before. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's really, really important, actually, because, you know, in my industry, and I'm sure it's like this in every industry, there are bad actors. You know, there are companies out there that are going to, you know, try to sell you a false bill of goods, or are going to try to, you know, bait and switch you, or, you know, try to be unethical in some way. So knowing that I was entering that industry with Atmosphere from the very beginning, I was always like, as soon as we stated what our five founding principles were, transparency and kindness were two of those five, right? That we wanted to be very upfront about things. We wanted, you know, people to know what was going on in terms of their contract. We didn't want it to be, you know, shady in any way. And even now, if you go to our website, our contract is public. We're the only book publisher I know that puts the full contract front and center for people to just read, because we want it to be fair. We want people to know what they're signing up for. Mm. And I think that with that sort of dedication right there, just ethics forward right from the very beginning, you know, meant that we also needed a team that was going to live up to that standard. So we wanted people to be kind. We knew that authors sometimes were treated poorly in the industry, not getting responses or being neglected or disrespected. There was a power imbalance between publishers and writers. So I always, right from the start, when I hired editors, I was like, we want to be encouraging. That's the first. We're not in here to go tear somebody's work to pieces. Like, you can give somebody rough news about a book.
I'm laughing because I remember our first traditionally published book. And I love our editor, by the way. But when at that time, he's not with us anymore. But the we got back a draft. And it was a fast turnaround. And we had asked him, get this to us quickly, because we were leaving on a speaking trip or something. And so he did. He went through it really fast. And as a result, he only put the red lines. And which my personality don't really have a problem with. Like, okay, great. And Karen, on the other hand, 2 pages in, she was about to turn to dust. she said, I can't do this. Is there anything good? I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I said, let's take a look. Remember, he was in a hurry. All the white space between red lines is, you did a good job there. It's just not written. And so kind of we talked each other down. Then I got to the incorporating the edits. And he wrote us about 4 hours later and said, guys, it occurs to me that because of the speed and the turn, I didn't do what I would normally do, which is all of the encouragement. And here's what you need to know. So he came back around and realized it, but how important that is that you're talking about, because, you know, when authors are putting their work out there, it's their baby. And so that kindness element, your story, you're talking about that just reminded me of that experience.
Yeah, no, that's great. And everybody who comes from, you know, like a writing background, it's like you focus so heavily on the red line, right? Like you're just like, in a writing workshop. It's like, what's wrong with this? You know, like that a lot of times really is sort of the starting point. It's like, let's point out everything that's not working, you know? So it's really important to remember, like, okay, we need to encourage people. Cause a lot of times, you know, you can't just, you know, throw them some weak compliment sandwich, you know, kind of situation. You know, you need to really like genuinely coach people through like trying to craft a better book, even though sometimes there's going to be some heavy lifting that they're going to have to do to get it where they want to get it. So with editors, always hiring for kindness, hiring for patience, like wanting to get people who are, you know, for all author facing positions, we just need them to be like responsive, encouraging, like upbeat, good sense of humor. Like we have as a company, like 24, you know, guiding principles that are integral to our culture. And like having a good sense of humor is on the list, right? Like we want you to be, you know, easygoing, but also like hyper dedicated. You know, we want you to be, you know, good. You know, with people and patient, not snap at them, even if they're driving you crazy. Cause sometimes, I mean, anybody is in a business situation. Sometimes people are going to drive you crazy, but you've got to be the bigger person in that. And in terms of a team, yeah, they've obviously have to work together with each other in terms of culture.
Well, I want to explore this a little bit more deeply because there are so many good leadership principles to draw out here for our listeners. So first, you've given thought to and defined your guiding principles, your values, the things that you stand for. You're actively hiring for those. You know, we talked about kindness and you kind of extended under the umbrella of kindness. You have respect and you've got responsiveness and you have sense of humor and all of these elements. Where I am curious, and this is a conversation and one of, like, if I'm going to geek out on culture, it's where values conflict. So I think that for so many organizations, it's one thing to say, these are our principles, these are our values, but we don't explore the conflicts. And those conflicts are where, if we don't have that conversation, you know, we've got a conflict between, we have a value of excellence, we have a value of love. We're going to love our customers, we're going to love one another, and we have a value of excellence. And when there are going to be times where those feel in conflict, what do? How do we resolve that? If we don't address that, the consequence is people think one or the other value, they don't really mean that. And it erodes. But of course, real life, there's always a conflict. There's always a nexus of those things. So I'm curious your approach to that, how you've seen that play out in your work.
Yeah, that's actually a really, really fascinating question because we have, you know, one of our principles is, you know, seek efficiency, aim to improve your processes always, be solution oriented, keep refining your approach and creating better models. And it's like thinking about that with like, have good humor, you know, is like, how do those two go? Or like even more conflict, having good humor with like, act like a professional, right? It's like, oh man, like, how am I supposed to tell like professional jokes, you know? And it's, I think it's, you know, there is friction between them, you know, and there is like a level of intuition, I think, that has to go between them, right? And to try to, you know, balance these things, like if somebody's like being too much of a stick in the mud and it's like, hey, you know, remember, you know, you're supposed to have some good humor here, you know, like chill out, we're all trying to have a good time, you know? And then on the other side of they're like, well, I'm just trying to be like a professional according to statute number 6 in atmosphere's guy. Be like, well, you know, let's pay attention to some of these other ones here too. So I do think that, you know, anytime you have guiding principles, there's always going to be wiggle room in the margins, right? And I think that, you know, if you're going to be, I think maybe it's a way to think about it is dogma, right? You know, like you don't want to be like dogmatic about any individual line, you know, because any individual line, of course, can be like taken out of context. Like we see this in, you know, all sorts of, you know, doctrines and religion and science and in various other belief systems and politics, you know, where somebody will just look at one little tiny bit and they sort of forget the big picture, right? So it's always, I kind of think about it almost like we have these guiding principles, and they're just an ocean of things, and they're all kind of sloshing around, and sometimes different things show up on shore and other ones are further adrift at sea, and then you need to go collect them and bring them back in. So it's, you could continue extending that metaphor. You get your fishing pole and try to, catch one that's far out at sea, one that's difficult to rein in, but I do think it's interesting. I think what you say about needing to address the conflict between them is a really interesting point too. And I think that that is where, as a leader, being forthright, like having an open door policy, like being humble, like that's a big one that I really emphasize, a lot, provides opportunities for people to point out the conflicts between these things rather than just having to live by them as some sort of strange religion.
Yeah. I'm picturing, well, first your metaphor, your ocean metaphor of those things swirling around somehow took me to my, one of my favorite, things for lunch. I'll have a kale, blueberry, apple, banana smoothie that I mix up myself. And yeah, individually, that's like a giant, I like drinking a salad, but you can't extract it. It's got to all be in there together somehow. I don't know where I just went with the food, but let's go back to the conflict here, because I'm picturing as it is good. I love those. I'm picturing with some chia and flax for those recipes. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different blog, a whole different podcast. So Nick, I'm curious, like, let's just take this down, continuing with this idea of values and in the friction. I like the word friction. Listen, it doesn't have to be conflict, just some friction, because you're hiring for kindness. So you want people who are kind, who are responsive, who are author centered and are encouraging to that author who's, coming to you with their book and, oh, it's not quite what they would want it to be yet and all of that. And so a person who takes that seriously, I can picture them also getting stressed when a colleague hasn't got their part in, and now like, shoot, I'm not being responsive, and now I'm getting stressed, and so they might take their work seriously, and then, oh, but crud, now I'm not having a sense of humor about what I'm doing, because we are not meeting our own commitment to our customer here, and that's stressing me out, and my sense of humor goes wanting. I might be asking for a friend on this one.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because they are in conflict with each other and trying to figure out, how to add them all. And I'd say, like, on our list, there are probably like a few that are less negotiable than others, right? You know, there are always going to be those ones where it's like, oh, you really need to follow that one all the time. And then other times, like, sometimes you've got to give bad news. Right. Like, it's if you're going to be, telling somebody something very difficult or doing some sort of course correction, whether it be for a team member or for a client, throwing some jokes into that email maybe isn't going to be the best idea. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've always got to use, like I mentioned before, like the word intuition, right? To try to, think through what are the best ways to do it. But I think a couple that we have that are like pretty, pretty much always going to be there that sort of take precedence. Like the first one on the list is remember how meaningful this is. People pour their hearts, hours, and money into their books, and we owe them the courtesy of our care. So it's like that one, you always got to keep that one in mind.
Non-negotiable. Yeah.
Yeah. That one's not negotiable. Also, the second one, be accountable, take responsibility for your mistakes and be straightforward and forthright about that responsibility. Right. Because everybody is going to be fallible. Right.
Yeah. I want to just note that included in that, it's not if you make a mistake, you're going to, it's, take accountability, take responsibility for them, so that there's that human acknowledgement in the combined right there present in the commendation that we're going to take responsibility.
Yeah. And I really love that a lot, like from a leadership perspective, because if you have one where it's like, if you make a mistake, because then people are like, oh, if I do, I'm going to be scared. Like we're going to make mistakes. Everybody is going to make mistakes. That's just how life is. I make mistakes, you know, like I, you know, try some plan where it's like, oh, we're going to try this initiative. And then 6 months later, I'm like, whoops, that one wasn't a good idea. Let's go ahead and rein that one back in. Or, you know, like we put in an order, a book order for an author, and it's like, whoops, we ordered the wrong book. You know, like we just got to own it. You know, own it, make the fix, you know, do what you can to make it right, you know, take responsibility, don't deflect. And I can say I'm, you know, very proud of how my team handles that. We're not, you know, an organization of finger pointers. You know, people do, if they mess something up, they take it, you know, they own it. And then it's easy to forgive a person who already, you know, has, you know, taken ownership, you know, so we really try to encourage that throughout. And you know, it can be, you know, difficult with clients sometimes when we've got to, you know, back the truck up a little bit, but I think the fact that we're willing to do that really engenders a lot of trust with our clients, because they know that if we do, you know, do something wrong, we're going to get it fixed. We're not going to hide from it.
And the other thing that is, I know, true without having watched any of your meetings or interactions, is that if people are able to take responsibility quickly and step up and own their own mistakes, you've also, as a leader, you're creating a culture where that is safe to do and where that is encouraged and it's respected and people aren't punished or jumped on or that kind of thing. And so for all, you know, as we're listening to this, I just want to draw that out, because that's the other side of the coin of the value, is the culture that you and your team are creating.
Yeah. And it's sort of relates to, you know, maybe like parenthood or whatever. You know, it's like when a child messes up, it's like, you obviously want to yell at them and be like, ah, you know, and like correct the behavior. But then a lot of times if you're, you know, punishing a child or a child screws something up, how does that situation end? It usually is going to end with the parent hugging the child and saying, it's okay, I love you anyway. Like, you're good. You're, this is a learning experience. Like, every failure is just, you know, a step on the path to getting it right. You know, and I think that it's the same thing sometimes with employees.
You know, there's a metaphor there that I really want to extend that I think has a lot to say about the book writing and editing process and leadership development. So we're going to go there in just a minute. But before we do, Nick, listeners are listening to you, guy, I need to connect with this guy. I need to learn more about his work. I need to learn more about him. Where should we go to connect with you, learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so atmospherepress.com, that's going to be, you know, the home of where we live and where we, you know, talk about what it is that we do. You know, and on there you're going to be able to see a lot of resources. You know, like, we really try to be a force for positive good for writers, regardless of whether they're working for us or not. So we have a really helpful blog on there. We've got a lot of insight on, you know, the types of things that we do offer, you know, our packages, our transparent contract. You know, we run a free interview series for authors. We do readings, the whole bit. And then, of course, there are the books that we sell, many of which are really good. And, you know, you should read, you know, we publish in all genres. But then also, an interesting thing on there is, if you are somebody who is interested in publishing a book, but you're not sure if you're ready, we actually have a publishing potential quiz on this site where you can just answer this brief quiz, you know, about how you feel about promoting your book. Do you have an idea of what your cover would look like? You know, how do you feel about working with an editor? You know, and you sort of just answer this really quick quiz, and then we'll actually give you sort of custom feedback based on your answers. Whether that means we're like, hey, you think it sounds like you might be somebody who's good to work with us, or whether it's like, you know, you should go, you know, pursue an agent. It sounds like that's what you're more interested in, or you should, you know, if you're early on in the writing process, then hey, these are some resources that can help you generate content. So yeah, atmospherepress.com, and then of course nickcourtright.com, and nickcourtright, and of course social media. Can't hide from that.
Because you, as in addition to the work that Atmosphere does, you are an author yourself as well.
Yep, someone's got to do it. So yeah, I definitely still work on, you know, creating creative work. I think that everybody should create, you know, like now in my role, you know, as a CEO, most of my creative work goes into writing really good emails. You know, that's
which are
where
really,
a lot of my
really good email is more work than one might think.
Oh yeah, you really gotta try to, you know, hit it right down the, throw it right down the center there sometimes, and get it right and make sure you sort of foreclose sort of potential misinterpretations and things like that. Whereas, you know, the work as a poet, sometimes you're trying to open potential interpretations. So it's always an interesting exercise.
Nice. I like that metaphor. I hadn't thought about that that way before. Well, speaking of metaphors, you know, earlier we were talking about red line edits in a book. And so stick with me here for a minute, because I'm going to go to a couple different things and it'll all pull together. So the our umbrella of this conversation is helping people grow, helping people develop, helping as a leader, helping people become the best version of themselves, grow into that potential. So I'm thinking of the way that I think many people default into, and maybe because of the way we're schooled and the way that our essays are critiqued when we're kids or that kind of thing. I think a lot of people think about human development like the statue kind of, you know, there's the old saw about, you know, there's a block of stone and you just got to remove all the pieces that aren't the sculpture, right? Mm-hmm. And that's more of an, I'm going to edit my way to success. I'm going to just keep removing stone until I get to the right thing. But that doesn't work for, you were saying this earlier, that does not work for book writing, because you might edit everything that's not good, but what does that leave you with? You actually have to encourage growth. You have to encourage what's good and build on that and help that author build and grow this work until it becomes what it's capable of being. And it strikes me, you know, with what you were saying earlier about that parent-child relationship that often ends with a hug and I love you and you are good and you are sufficient and you're growing and that's what it's all about. Now, obviously, we're not hugging our employees and telling them we love them most of the time, but there is a parallel here. So I'm curious, taking all of that setup, your approach to employee development, employee growth, and how you go about encouraging and bringing out the best in people, while also we do need to edit sometimes and we do need to know that's not cool. How do you approach that from your perspective as a CEO, as a business leader?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think it's really interesting to tie it back to the old thing about chipping away until you find the sculpture within. I've always loved that kind of mindset. But the part that people often forget is that you need to get the marble first, right? It's like, oh, and you can just chip away until you find it. It's like, well, what are you chipping away from? You know, you need to have something like substantial there. And I think that to sort of work with that metaphor a little bit in terms of employee development is that you try to find people that already have a lot of marble, right? You know, so then even if you are, you know, chipping away at it, you know, and trying to find like the ideal employee, that there's always a reserve, you know, there's always something more that you haven't accessed yet, you know, that because people are amazingly capable, you know, and a lot of times people will say, oh, I've, you know, this is the limit of what I can do, or this is my skill set. Well, people are malleable, you know, neuroplasticity is real. You can take even somebody who's quite entrenched, and if they are sufficiently dedicated to growth and to self-education, you know, they can train themselves to do new things. And that's one thing that we've really, really worked on with our team at Atmosphere is, you know, cross training individuals. A lot of times it's really easy just to say, oh, we need somebody to be able to do this, so we're going to go out and hire somebody who could do that. But every time that question comes up, I just pull out our entire team, the entire list, and I just go through like one person at a time. I'm like, does this person seem like a good fit for this? Does this person seem like they would like to add this to their plate? Does this person want this kind of skill development? And always ask, because it's amazing what they say about, like the great thing in Good to Great, the Jim Collins book, right? About you need to have the right people in the right seats, and sometimes you might have the right people, but not in the right seats. So thinking about that, thinking about, well, maybe they're already in the right seat, but the seat can be even better.
And it's one of
maybe
those
we
things
can.
you don't know until you ask sometimes of, as you put that request out there and say, hey, we're looking at doing this. And is there interest? Somebody might be thriving and doing really well in the seat they're in, but if you don't ask, you may not ever know they have interest in that other thing.
Yeah, and that's one reason why at least once a year, if not twice a year, I just send out a blast to our team just saying, like, what else would you want to do? Like, and I'll list in there, like, here are some areas, where we might, need growth in the future, or we might need somebody to be able to do this. Do any of these things interest you? And we've consistently sort of gotten responses back to that and been surprised by finding out that, oh, that like developmental editor over there actually like knows HTML. Like, who knew? And you find that out, and then like, okay, well, let's go ahead and see if they're going to be a good fit for the author website development team. And being open to that, and being receptive and listening to what people say, and then always just looking for opportunities to grow your people, to develop them so that they don't get stagnant or like bored or complacent in a role. People a lot of times like learning. They want new skills, because even if they don't ultimately stay with Atmosphere forever, that's going to benefit them in the future. So one way or another, we want to, develop them as people, either inside the company or, in their lives, wherever life may take them.
And you are an embodiment of that principle. So, the path from poet and freshman comp professor to publishing CEO, that you were open to those and exploring it. And I empathize with that as well. I mean, I started my career in secondary education. And back then, I'm not going to be an entrepreneur, I'm not going to be a business owner, author, yeah, maybe. But the rest of it at that point hadn't occurred to me. So, you just don't know what people have in them until you make it available.
Yeah, and it's also fascinating. There's all that research out, about how people are changing careers more often than they used to. It used to be standards, like, you were in a line of work and you were in that line of work for 50 years, and then they'd, give you your gold watch at retirement, and that was that. But now, people do bounce around. They, end up doing wildly different things over the course of their life, so trying to facilitate that for them, and because you never know, people will surprise you and be capable of more than you'd think. So, trying to, encourage that, and also at times, you gotta light a fire under people. If they do seem to stagnate in a role, it's like, okay, like, are you gonna, get your A game back on, or do we need to put you somewhere different? And just trying to be open about that and, talk through it.
Cannot agree more. Our guest today has been Nick Courtright, the founder and CEO of Atmosphere Press, hybrid publishing company that puts the author experience first. And Nick, I really appreciate everything you shared with us today. And as we wrap up, I just want to go back to that first, that North Star principle that I thought is such a good example as we look at our own organizational or team values or team principles or company values and principles, the way that yeah, there are some that this is a North Star. When in doubt, go here. So give us that one more time.
Yeah, so the one most non-negotiable, in terms of helping authors with their book for our team is remember how meaningful this is. People pour their hearts, hours, and money into their books, and we owe them the courtesy of our care.
Love that so much. And it occurs to me that just about any work that anyone listening to this show is doing has a similar aspect to it. remember how important this is. And we owe our customers, whether that's a client, a constituent, an internal customer, the courtesy of our care. Nick, thanks so much for being a guest today on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Thank you for having me.
It's been our pleasure. All right, listeners, you've got it. Go out. Owe them the courtesy of your care. Help your team to cultivate the courtesy of our care and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.